It's the classic daydream when modern life gets you down. Pack it all in, move to a deserted tropical island. After Sydney mining investor David Glasheen lost millions in the 1987 stock market crash, he decided to make that fantasy real. After 10 years of failed get-rich-quick schemes, he took on a lease on Restoration Island. It's a speck of land off Cape York, known as Malpiku Island by its Indigenous custodians, 40 minutes by boat from Lockhart River. That's the same island that Captain William Bligh and his crew ended up on after the mutiny on the Bounty in 1789. David's nearly 76 now, and he grows his own food, he trades beer with passing fishermen, and he hosts the occasional curious visitor. It sounds very romantic, but can you really run away from everything? What is life really like for David Glasheen? He might tell us. Welcome to Life Matters, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, your book's called Millionaire Castaway. That seems very apt. But how did you end up on Restoration Island?
Well, I guess it was a series of events, you know, from the 87 crash to the final nail in the coffin, if you like, which was like 91, which is what happens. It takes a while for the crash to actually physically hit the rocks. But, you know, in that process, you know, it was really difficult. Our life changed dramatically, really, psychologically, physically, mentally, financially, in every which way, basically. And, yeah, bit by bit, the life that I had was being torn apart, you know, like marriage, a breakdown in your marriage, you know. And it's a very difficult time. And you feel like throwing the whole lot in and you start thinking about, you know, what are you going to do and where do you start? And so I decided, really, that I needed a serious sort of shock breaker and the idea of not running away, because I didn't run away. I basically left where I was, and through mates and connections, which I still had, I said, well, I need an island. I met a new lady, which was really sort of bizarre. I wasn't looking for a new lady, but yeah, it was over a period. It wasn't immediately, of course, but it was over a period. And one thing just led to another, we found this little island. It was called Restoration Island, after the restoration of the men. And we looked at one other, and all of a sudden, a simple idea became a bit complicated with more people involved. But I went up there. We went up there to have a look at it. And I just fell in love with the place, you know, and the rest is history, as they say. You know, I went up there initially to have a look, and then we end up in a joint venture arrangement with the owners who had it for sale. And then a court case arrived, and which I didn't want to be involved, just left all that. And we had a serious court case with the local traditional owners because of we didn't understand the politics. And I went up there on a second occasion with a view of trying to basically mediate and talk around the issues and try to resolve the position. But we end up in court, and I refused to be involved. And I had some help from my family, my brother, who's close to Aboriginal people and understanding how to work with them. And so I stayed and never left.
And David, you went up, as you say, with this particular idea in mind. You were going to sublease this island. You were going to build a resort on it and get back on your feet that way. And now you're living in your boardies, if anything.
Yep.
In a very different way. It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? Tell us what the island looks like and what your little inhabitation looks like.
Well, it's a classic sort of mainland island. The height of the mountain range is about 120 metres. It's volcanic. It's a volcanic mainland island. And it's got fringing reefs around it with gold and white sandy beaches in the shape of a heart shape almost. And it is about 5 acres in the flat area, and that's where the buildings are. There's not many buildings. They're basically, you know, buildings from pre-war years. And, you know, I've turned it into a home. It's still very basic, but it's got a lot more colour and flavour today by, you know, the help of, you know, with a bit of help from your friends, basically. You know, people I've had volunteers helping me over all these years, and male and female with ideas. And, it looks, today it's just, it's fantastic. It's a bit, right now, we've just been bashed by a cyclone recently, so it's a major repair sort of, or restoration job again, but that's what it's like in the wild, you know. nature gives you a wake-up call, and you can't do much about it, really, in a cyclone.
Well, and you've got your water tank, you've got the very basics of sustenance, haven't you? You've got, but you've also got internet. You've got better internet than a lot of other people in remote Australia, I understand.
I've got better than most people in Sydney, I think, from what I can find down here. And, you know, it's really important because I can keep contact with the world, and also it's communications. I've got no other means of communicating with anybody because the phone's been out for nearly 18 months. We had a problem in the Lockhart region with the tower, and it still isn't fixed. So I've only had a satellite phone, which doesn't work most of the time. And, you know, it's a bit hard with that communications in case something goes wrong. You know,
and something did go wrong, didn't it, a while ago?
Yeah, it did. I broke my hip. I had a fall and I broke my hip. And without that phone, I'd be dead. So, you know, I'm a lucky guy that you don't get many of these chances either. You know, so I'm aware of that. And I'm pretty careful anyway. I'm not 18 anymore, so I've got to be aware of it. I remind myself of that quite a bit, but I'm still fit and healthy, though.
What was going through your mind, though, as you were dragging yourself along the beach? It took you an hour to get to the sat phone. You're obviously going, I hope it works today. But what were you thinking about? Were you wondering what the rest of your life was going to be like on that island if you made it through that event?
Well, I didn't have the sat phone then. I had the ordinary phone then. But, yeah, I dragged myself to the house, and it was, I knew I was in trouble, you know, and serious trouble. And once I sat down, I figured I might get out of the seat. So I thought I'd better think about what I needed, which was water. And that didn't last long. And I started making phone calls. And the nurses from Lockhart couldn't come and get me because they only had one in attendance. So they weren't able to come. I needed painkillers. And a couple of the local boys arrived, fishermen who were connected to a neighbour, arrived and gave me a bit of medical marijuana, and I had a good sleep. But they couldn't get me till the following morning. The ambulance came by chopper from TI, from Thursday Island, and then they took me to Cairns in the Flying Doctor. So it all worked pretty seamlessly, and then they gave me some serious pain-killing injections on the way. So, and then they drilled my hip, and I've got a bionic hip, if you like. It's a broken hip in the I don't know the technical word, but anyway, it was a major operation for people my age, you know.
What was it like being in the hospital, going through that when you'd been used to living on the island?
Well, pretty hard. I've had a few trips to hospital, and it's all related to the wildlife, basically, or an accident. You know, I've had a spider bite, a white-tailed spider, and that got out of hand, and I had to be flown out for that. But you know, it's all happened over the last 5 years. Otherwise, I know nothing about hospitals. I keep away from those places.
You talked a bit about some of the dangerous creatures. Is Boxhead the crocodile still giving you grief?
Yeah, he's around. He's I'm starting to. Well, he'll be there for a fair while. I think we don't know how old he is, but you know, they outlive humans, crocodiles. So as long as he doesn't get has a major problem in his own, there's not many creatures attacking crocodiles. I think they're the top of the food chain around our area. But, you know, it's a matter of living with nature and understanding it and being aware. He's out there and, you know, he's usually pretty visual. So I know him. We all know this crocodile. But they're also, you know, I'm glad he's there, you know what I mean? Like, even though he's dangerous, I like him, you know, he's a mate.
Well, he's had a terrible impact on your dogs, unfortunately, too, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, not only just me. He likes dogs and they're easier targets. But yeah, you know, the smart dogs don't last long. But mine have been pretty good. My main dog, Quasi, had two crocodile attacks in his life. Well, not many dogs ever survive one attack, let alone two. But he got taken by a taipan. So he had a great life, you know, 12 years of a wonderful life. A great dog, you know, and now I've got a dingo. And they're way smarter. So he's only a young one, but he's born with intelligence, you know. So I'm pretty confident that the Zeddy will be there for as long as me, you know.
Well, and obviously the dogs are pretty important for companionship. Do you miss the humans, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, dogs are terrific, but they're not humans. They're probably nicer sometimes. But yeah, of course I do. But I do meet people. I get visitors, not many. But the ones that I do get are usually interesting. You know, I meet people you'd never meet in mainstream. So
well, there's someone that rocked up on his yacht, wasn't there, and you weren't quite sure who he was.
Yeah, my mate Russell.
Russell Crowe. Bizarre.
Well, yeah, I thought he was a tennis player or a golfer. When they told me his name, but yeah, he was a great guy and a lovely man, and he was interested in what I was doing there and what I'm trying to do with the Lockhart River people.
So, what are you trying to do now, David? Because you've kind of come full circle, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've been restored in a holistic way. You know, I was in trouble in mentally, physically, financially. Probably every which way, you know, and you're at a point in your life where you probably think about taking it. And so I've been at that level in my life, and it's pretty hard. And it's all relative, you know. Most people in Australia have a great life. We don't understand how good it is compared to most of the world, but it's relative to what you're used to. And, but, you know, I look back on my early days in my life and on reflection through my book. And this island has done everything for me, and it was named by Bligh for the same reason. And I want to do that I want the island to work to help other people, because people are in trouble, and big trouble, like me.
So you want to build a place on the island that helps them be restored the way Bligh's crew were restored and brought the island its name. But what do the local Indigenous people feel like about that these days? Because they were anti at the time you arrived, weren't they?
Seriously anti, because we did everything, whatever we could have done wrong, we did. You know, we had no respect for their ownership, you know, and it was just terrible, really. And it's hard to believe how ignorant we were. But now it's a genuine kinship and friendship, and we have a joint responsibility to do something. And I've got connections in Lockhart that understand me. I've earned my stripes, as they say. You can't just come into a foreign land as we did and expect white fella laws to work. It doesn't work like that up there. The Aboriginal people don't think like that. They're different people. They're fantastic people. And they can probably teach us more than we can teach them. And particularly in the healing area. And even though they're in trouble, as we are, I think it's a great concept. And I want to do that. I want a healing and inspirational retreat. And we can do it without financially, in a not financial way, because there are ways through social enterprises that allow this. And it's only new in this country, but that's the future of how we can do it. And but people have to do it themselves, though. And all we can do is help. Provide the facilities, basically, the healers, the facilities, and just the environment itself there. It's a very powerful place.
And David, are you hoping that the publicity from the book, Millionaire Castaway, will help you towards that goal of getting this place built?
Well, that's the main, the second main focus is that. I need to attract real people who understand what I'm talking about, that are prepared to be in for the long term. And it's not money driven. Money is the problem with everybody. It's like a disease. It's like an addiction down here. And there's so much wealth, and there's so much non wealth. But I see issues around me everywhere. And the purpose of the book is to do that, and also to repair my own family relationships, which have been very difficult.
And how hard was it, David? Because you had two older daughters and a young son when you went to the island. How hard's it been being apart from them?
Well, really hard, you know. Having your money taken away is one thing, but having your family ripped away is a lot harder. And you can't buy them. You can't buy a family. You know, you've got to earn one, or maintain one. And it's really hard when you've got your life being torn off you, you know. And then I lost one through suicide. You know, my second daughter took her own life, and she was living up there with me. She was in trouble down here, and ever since my marriage broke down is when the problem started. And I think this is the biggest problem we have here. The broken marriages in the country are everywhere, and it's sort of normal today. Well, it wasn't when I was a young person. It wasn't normal. But it is now.
Mind you, there are a lot of people suffering in marriages that perhaps shouldn't have gone on back in the day.
I know that too. I realise that too. But it didn't happen with me. So I don't understand. It's very hard to understand something if you have never experienced it. So I grew up in probably the best circumstances ever. So I find it really hard to understand. But I can see it there, and I've seen it for many years. So I was one of the lucky ones, you know. It was just luck.
David, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your life on Restoration Island, Malpiku Island, as the traditional owners know it, off Cape York, and all the best for the future.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciate being able to air my opinion.
It's a pleasure for us too. David Glasheen, co-author of Millionaire Castaway with Neil Bramwell. And if this discussion has raised any issues for you, you can always find someone to talk it through with on Lifeline. That number's 13 11 14. You're listening to Life Matters on RN.